Jackson, W266, DR Waukesha. Always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by Liberty Mutual Insurance.
I'm Tom Foti in Washington. Congressional Republicans want to hear and see a lot more about those sensitive documents that have turned up in President Biden's private home in a Washington office. Kentucky Congressman James Comer, chairman of the House Oversight Committee, he's looking into it. CBS's Adriana Diaz, who broke the initial story, picks it up there.
He has launched an investigation into this as chair of the House Oversight Committee, which oversees the National Archives, parts of the executive branch as well. He also requested visitor logs from the Wilmington home. He said he wants to know who was in the house, who has left the house, who possibly could have laid eyes on these documents.
The White House says there are no visitor logs for President Biden's private home. In cities and towns, big and small, there were events marking the birthday holiday of the Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. In Atlanta,
Carolyn and Jerry tell me it's important for them to be here celebrating Dr. King.
I choose to come here.
I also met Jen, who's here from Texas, and she says she wants to soak it all in.
I think it's something that needs to be remembered and just celebrated how far we've come. We still have a lot of work to do.
At Ebenezer Baptist Church in Atlanta, Michelle Wright for CBS News, Atlanta.
President Biden says he is ready to work with Republicans on the issue of the nation's debt ceiling, which needs raising soon, but within limits. Correspondent Scott McFarland.
This was one of the wedge issues they were trying to iron out behind closed doors, is what to do about the debt ceiling dispute when it comes down the road. And we're down that road now. If we're even talking about this, there's a lack of certainty that could rattle the markets and could rattle the economy. It did in 2011 when they got near a deadline, and that's the reality we face now.
California authorities looking for at least two persons in the early morning killing of six people, including a six-month-old baby.
The killings took place just past 3 o'clock in the morning at a Central California home near the city of Visalia. Two of those killed were found dead in the street, Sheriff Mike Boudreau.
This definitely was not a drive-by shooting. We definitely have suspects who came in onto the property and made it very personal.
Investigators believe the killings are gang-related. Just last week, the sheriff's office conducted a narcotics-related search warrant at the residence. Steve Futterman, CBS News.
Meantime, there are calls for answers after a police-related death in Tennessee. 29-year-old Tyree Nichols died 2 days after police used force on him during a traffic stop for reckless driving. Paula Buress is a community activist in Memphis.
If there's any police misconduct, we would like to see the officers in this case, involved in this case, charged, every single one of them.
U.S. financial markets were closed for the Martin Luther King Jr. federal holiday, but overseas markets were open. Europe was higher. In after-hours trading, U.S. market futures have also been lower. This is CBS News.
Nobody should have to pay for one-size-fits-all insurance coverage. Liberty Mutual customizes your car and home insurance so you only pay for what you need. Liberty Mutual.
WAUK 540 AM. New Berlin's choice for News Talk Radio. Streaming 24/7 at waukradio.com.
For Civic Media, I'm Terry Bell with this news. Democrats are speaking out against the flat tax proposal Republicans rolled out Friday. Madison State Senator Melissa Agard says it doesn't help the people in Wisconsin who need it most. Right now, the progressive tax rate goes from about 3.5% up to almost 7.7%. The flat tax proposal would make everyone's state income tax rate 3.25% by 2026. Unusually rainy weather in Wisconsin for January today. Winter driving conditions are hazardous in parts of central and northern Wisconsin thanks to freezing rain in the morning. Roads, sidewalks, and parking lots are slippery. It's probably a good idea to give yourself some extra time getting around today. In sports, the Bucks host Indiana this afternoon. Tampa Bay hosts Dallas in the NFL playoffs tonight. You're listening to The Shaw, 101 FM, WAUK 540 AM.
It's a new year, and because we're excited about our new and still growing Civic Media network of radio stations, it's time to do something really big. How does $1 million advertising giveaway sound to you? Our celebration is your chance to work with Civic Media's amazing sales team, creating a radio advertising campaign promoting your business for free. Save the date. The $1 million advertising giveaway is only happening on Thursday, January 26th. Full details on our website, civicmedia.us/million.
Our guest is Kristen Elfheim, who is the state Senate candidate for District 19 in the Fox Valley.
Listen Monday through Friday from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. for As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry.
There are really good people that have been in Madison on both sides. And if we're not letting the strongest problem solvers win, we're making a mistake.
Listen to As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry right here on the Shaw 101 FM and WAUK 540 AM.
27% of the American workforce, and some even say 30%, were in unions who had representation and who clearly did not have to worry about whether or not they were going to get their fair share. But I'm definitely going to fight for people who get the short end of the stick in this society only because they don't have representation. That's who I am.
Check out the Earl Ingram Show every day from 8 a.m. to 11 a.m. only on WAUK 540 AM 101 FM, The Shaw.
WAUK 540 AM, Brookfield's choice for news talk radio. Streaming 24/7 at WAUKradio.com. A progressive voice from Manitowoc to Janesville. WAUK 540 AM, always streaming at
WSmithShow.com and download the podcast and never miss a minute.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here today on the big program. Lots to get to, lots to talk about. It is Martin Luther King Jr. Day. The day when everyone Googles MLK quotes and picks something that fits their narrow-minded ideology. So they go, hey, look, I know something. And look, I spent the day going through the Googles and the Facebooks and the Twitters and all of that, looking at Republican legislators pretending they'd be marching over the Edmund Pettus Bridge in Selma or taking on slave owners. Yeah, that's what they're doing. Picking out their favorite quote, you know, whatever the number one on Google is. Or I gotta think the RNC puts it out, and you know, this is the one we're using today because it seemed a lot of them used the same one. Now, granted, these are the people who vote against equality. These are the people who vote against equity. These are the people who vote against humanity at every turn. So. On this day, you know, I kind of go, it's disingenuous. Maybe sit down, maybe sit this one out, maybe try not to be, you know, woke in this moment. You know, maybe, you know, shut up. Just a thought, just throwing that out there. Because it's interesting to me. Interesting. Again, the very people who pursue the worst policies for the people that King was standing up and fighting for. They're attempting to steal the legacy. I find that ironic and interesting and sad and a whole bunch of things. Now, the National Rifle Association, even they got into it. They tweeted out today, the National Rifle Association celebrates the life and legacy of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. and his commitment to freedom for every American, regardless of race, color, or creed. Freedom is never guaranteed. We must continue to fight to preserve our liberty, i.e. buy more guns. Now, I do find it odd since, you know, King was shot and killed with a gun. One that was, as I understand, illegally gotten, you know. But never mind. Don't look behind the curtain. The NRA wants you to believe that they would have been right there with King. They'd have been standing, they'd have been marching right there at the Lorraine Motel, you know, standing guard had they known. Now, we know why King was in Memphis when he was murdered. He was there supporting sanitation workers. He was there supporting workers to fight for better wages, hours, conditions, because economics, something pretty special to him. Because, understand, you know, what good is it to have equality if you don't have equality? Now, what caught my attention today, other than the irony of all of these people throwing out these King quotes that are, well, just disingenuous and sad, there was a story out of Arkansas. Disgraceful, horrible. That, you know, just grabbed my attention. Evidently, it broke on Friday. There was a lawsuit. This homeless guy. Guy with a very low IQ. They said the IQ of somewhere like 55. 50-year-old man was, you know, just hanging around the police station in Fort Smith, Arkansas. Something I guess he had done all the time. But on this one particular day, he points his finger like it's a gun and he points it at people. And they arrest him for terroristic threats in the first degree. Pointing the finger, remember? Now, everyone agrees he had not the mental capacity to make those threats. But for his own safety, they arrested him and they put him in jail for the concerns, the well-being, the safety of not just the police officer, but him as well. They put him in jail. They're going to get him the help he needs. Now, this guy is 6'2", 200 pounds. Big guy. Big black man. Scary. They lock him up on $1,000 bond. He's homeless. He's broke. He doesn't have the $100 for cash bail to get out. So he sits in jail over a year. For over a year. Now, this isn't unusual. This is the reason that people are against cash bail, because, you know, people don't have the resources to be able to get out, where someone with a meager amount of resources could easily get out and go on with their life and deal with whatever legal problems they have and all that. I think of the guy in Philadelphia who, you know, stole 3 peppermint patties and served, you know, sat in jail 500 plus days just awaiting for a place to have his trial. Not even sentenced. And that's what this guy is. He has not been sentenced. He's waiting for them to figure out what they're going to do. So much for that right to a speedy trial thing. Well, you know, they lock him up and put him in solitary confinement for over a year. I'm just going to read the Newsweek article. From then, everything else that could have gone wrong for Mr. Price did. His mind lost, his health gone, and seemingly no one paying attention to his well-being, Price was dead a year later at 51. He was found in solitary confinement cell with his eyes wide open, naked, starved, dried saliva on his corners of his mouth, in a pool of standing water so large at his feet, he shriveled. He had long since had his medication taken away. Toward the end, he resorted to eating his own feces and drinking his own urine. They starved this man to death. And all along, they said, oh, every day's checked. They checked on him every day. Inmate's okay. Now, this is a 200-pound guy, 6'2", 200-pound guy, big guy. When they weighed him for the autopsy, and the autopsy photos are disturbing to say the least, he weighed just 90 pounds. 90 pounds. This is America, friends. This is Arkansas. So when I see Sarah Huckabee Sanders, the governor of Arkansas, coming out talking about, you know, we need competition in schools and, you know, we need to take on those failing schools, I'm of the mindset it's time to start breaking up these failed states. It's time we stop funding these failed states like Arkansas, like Mississippi, like Alabama, who, oh, by the way, Mississippi and Alabama have an interesting little tradition today on Martin Luther King's birthday. You know what that is? They also celebrate Robert E. Lee Day, you know, bipartisanship, because, you know, they should go together. So I'm in this moment where it's time maybe we start talking about defunding these failed states, because clearly they're not protecting the civil rights of their citizens. They don't care about their citizens, because if you listen to Sarah Huckabee Sanders, and this is where my mind went, she said the schools are failing, we need to get rid of them, and because it's all about the children. Well, you know what? It's all about the citizens. And it's clear, clear that these states cannot protect their citizens. So it's time we start breaking up these states. It's time we start breaking up these failed states. But But as I read this story, and I'm just heartbroken. Because the humanity, how do you sit and watch somebody starve to death right before your very eyes? How do you watch somebody go from 200 pounds down to 90 pounds over a year and starve and be in the condition? How do you do that? How does a human being do that to another? And why are those people in any position of power whatsoever? So for those who say, well, you know, it's a lot better than it used to be. It might be better, but I don't know that's a lot. I used to be one of those people who thought, you know, it's not about black and white, it's about green. It's still economic disadvantages and it's all that. But back in 2015, when we went on our civil rights tour, and we went to all of those places throughout the South that treated black people really, really badly, that now have museums going, look how bad we were to them. And here, come be, disaster tourists. And you see those images and you see those photos and you see that. It's heartbreaking. It's angering. So to hear Republicans say, well, you want to learn about critical race theory. And yeah, I want to learn actual history. So that maybe this doesn't happen today. They starved a man to death in a jail cell where he was supposed to be for his own good, for his protection. Remind me, next time someone wants to protect me, don't call them. I want to hear your thoughts. 1-866-416-RICK. 1-866-416-7425. I'm going to take a quick break. Right back after this. Stick around. Fan of the show, you've heard our Labor History in Two segments, and you can hear them on the radio pretty much anywhere in the U.S. Labor history has never been more important than it is right now. So here's what we'd like you to do. Tell a teacher that labor history is important and that they can get digestible two-minute lessons that are absolutely free to download, free to use, free to share. Tell a teacher to go to therickssmithshow.com/history and help us put labor back where it belongs, in the classroom. You know, generations of American workers fought, bled, and died to build the American way of life. It's our job to keep their stories alive. Go tell a teacher that we're here to help them do just that. Find us at therickssmithshow.com/history today.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
I gotta tell you, I keep coming back to this. You know, I don't know how you can do to a human being what those folks in Fort Smith, Arkansas did to that man. I have no idea. I have no idea. Color of your skin, I don't get it. Let's go to the phones. Got Alice on line one. Alice, how are we doing?
Oh, we're doing okay. I can't even watch an animal starve, let alone a human. And I tend to agree with you that we need to defund these failing Southern states.
The sad reality is...
Enough.
No, the reality is, Alice, is we spend so much money on propping them up. We give our tax dollars if you're Massachusetts, if you're New Jersey, if you're California, you've got to be flipping mad because you're funding them. You're funding this kind of dysfunction. And what we know is they're failed governments. They have lower wages, less health care for their workers. During the pandemic, more people died because of their failed leadership. We know the work environments are less safe. They're covered by less health care. Life basically just all over worse. And yet we're funding this, so what? So that we can make some rich people even richer?
Well, yes. And not only that, is their stupidity affects the rest of us also. I mean, let's just take a look at Texas. You know, all of a sudden they were wanting to sue this state and that state and because their civil rights of their voters, all this kind of nonsense. And they're basically killing the rest of us by spreading the COVID germs. But, hey, you know, it's just crazy. But you have to remember, Rick, and I'm totally serious when I say this to you, you have to remember this, that those Southern people actually believe that black people are not human. And I'm not joking about this. They literally believe that, well, you know, they look human, but they're not the same as us.
Yeah, there's a sense. Look, when I was in Georgia for a couple of weeks, I kept hearing that kind of frame that, you know, he's a good one, he'll do what he's told, that kind of stuff that you would hope went away years ago. I'm not going to go with all people in the South are like this, but yeah, there's definitely an element there, absolutely without question. I agree with you.
There is. But you know what? All we can do is fight a good fight. You have a good evening, Rick.
Thanks, Alice. Appreciate it. No, I'm serious about this. It's time to start defunding these failed states. It's time for the federal government to go in and start protecting people. This kind of stuff cannot happen. You go, well, it's just some local yokels. Yeah, that's the problem. That's the problem. It's infuriating. The segue, not a good one. Yeah, because I'm going, you know, how do I go from, you know, because I'm angry about this situation, but I'm also angry about the fact that, you know, we keep hearing about inflation, we keep hearing about, you know, all of the pain and suffering. Have you noticed that since the election, Republicans haven't been talking about, you know, inflation very much? They want a recession, but they haven't been talking about the inflation so much. Because we're not really suffering from inflation. We're suffering from corporate greed. We're suffering from the rich and powerful being able to line their pockets at the expense of the rest of us. And I point today to the story of Wendy's, because Wendy's has risen their prices again, I guess an additional 5% this year. And the CEO of Wendy's blames it on, you know, it's those workers' fault. You know, it's the wage increases. You know, we had to raise the prices because, you know, those workers demand wages. You know, it's the cost of commodities. It's not us. No, it's not us. Yet the real story, Wendy's profits jumped 36% in 2021. And net income was up 70%. So again, it's not inflation. It's good old-fashioned American corporate greed. And I said this from day one when the first report came out saying, oh, we're suffering from inflation. No, it's not inflation. This is by choice. This is corporate America going, aha, here's an opportunity to line our pockets. Now understand, their profits increased 36% in 2021. Now they're complaining that it's the wages, yet 87% of their workforce make less than $15 an hour. 17% of their workforce makes less than $10 an hour. I'm sorry, I don't see am I missing something? Or wait a second, maybe it's the CEO's pay that's caused all the inflation. Because again, you know, if you put me in a room with Bill Gates or with Elon Musk, well, maybe not Musk anymore, but if you put me in the room with Gates or with Bezos, yeah, we're going to be gazillionaires together. I'm still poor, but the average is really good. Now, the reason I bring up Wendy's, because they jacked up their prices, complaining it's those greedy workers. Yet we see the profit margins. And the story today, about an hour ago I found this, over at investing.com, they've pointed out the five biggest stock buybacks, Wendy's being number one. Wendy's Incorporated, they said, jumped 6% after the company announced $500 million share repurchase authorization. Yeah, stock buybacks. That means that they couldn't figure out what to do with this $500 million windfall. We got all this cash laying around. What are we going to do with it? We're certainly not going to give it to the workers because we raised the prices and blamed them so we could get this $500 million. What are we going to do? Oh, we're going to enrich ourselves. And, well, That's what they've done. Also in that world of stock buybacks, Victoria's Secrets. Evidently, they've made a cool quarter of $1 billion in excess profits that they want to buy back some shares with, they enrich the CEOs. I mean, we're seeing these stock buybacks, which if you see this in the news, if you're a working person and you see this, you should be angry. You should be furious because that was stolen from you, from me, from working people. Well, how is that possible? Well, it's possible because in the past, before we had these kind of things, thanks, Ronald Reagan, that profit was something that unions used to sit down and bargain for. Say, hey, you got $500 million in extra profits. How about we give some of that to the people who actually earned it? How about we have higher wages, better working conditions, better health care, better retirement security? I mean, stop and think about the fact that retirement security is gone. It's gone. There's no more retirement plans left. You know, I still remember the defined benefit pension funds. I know it's hard to remember. You got to think back a while. But there used to be a thing called a defined benefit pension, where at the end of your years, you got X amount of dollars for the rest of your life. Gone. Now we give you these wonderful 401ks that nobody can afford to fund. And we're heading towards a retirement crisis. A tsunami of people who don't have anything set aside and are literally going to have to work till they die because we got to keep feeding the profit monster. Because the profit monster wants more. It never ends. You look at the fact that, according to Oxfam, they found the pandemic years, 2020, 2021, 63% of all new global wealth was captured by the top 1%. What that means is the billionaires, you know, are ultra wealthy. They gained an average of $1.7 million for every $1 in new wealth earned by those at the bottom. You know, the rest of us, the 90% of us. Stop and think about that for a minute. Think about the enormity of that statement. Think of how screwed up our economic system is. And this is where, for me, it comes back to the politics. It comes back to, it matters who we elect. All of the other stuff is, all the outrage candy, all of the divisive stuff, all of that stuff aside, it's about, we're getting robbed daily. Corporate America is sticking it to us at every turn. And then, you know, telling us, no, it's something else. It's inflation. It's not that we've made the choice to raise prices through the roof. It's not that people have seen a good opportunity to be greedy. Because again, remember, the free market, because we're sold this free market ideology. We're sold this from birth, that this is a free market economy. The only problem with a free market economy is you can't have a free market economy unless you have the freedom to abstain. That's what makes it free. Sorry, housing is something that, you know, they don't let us live on the streets. Food isn't free. You have to, utilities, just to live. Heck, you go to jail, they're going to charge you. Or they might kill you. And we're in this moment where, again, we're still, the email I get from people is just outrageous on the divisive stuff. And you go, but what's really important is how are we going to ensure that people are able to keep a roof over their head, food on the table, a future. But that's not where we are anymore. Corporate America has done a nice job. Nice job of muddying the waters. Nice job of slicing and dicing and pitting us against each other. Why? Again, 63% of all new wealth on this planet was captured by the 1%. That's insane. Literally insane. So as I go through this, I can't help but think that this is a moment where we have got to come together and push back and be done. be done with the divisiveness, be done with the outrage candy. And say, you know what? It's about time we have an economic system that works for working people, a tax code that.
The Shaw 101 FM, your fix for progressive talk from Butler to Windlake. Always streaming at waukradio.com.
CBS News Brief. Congressional Republicans are asking for visitor logs for President Biden's Delaware home. This in connection with those sensitive documents that have been found there, but...
The White House tells CBS News that while they keep records of who comes and goes from the White House, there are no such records at the president's personal residence.
That's correspondent Skylar Henry. On this holiday, noting his birth, remembering the Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. around the country.
To see so many people celebrating is so valuable for us.
Dr. Martin Luther King was a great man. He did a lot for not only black people, but for America and for the world.
There are more questions tonight about that New York congressman with a much-questioned past.
There's already been an ethics complaint filed by some of his U.S. House colleagues, and CBS News has learned a controversial donor with ties to a Russian oligarch was one of Santos's major donors.
That is CBS News congressional correspondent Scott McFarland. CBS News Brief, I'm Tom Foti.
The Shaw, 101 FM, WAUK 540 AM, Wisconsin's home for rational talk radio.
For Civic Media, I'm Jane Matnier with your headlines. Access to safe abortions for women in southern Wisconsin is a little bit closer with a new clinic opening up in Rockford, Illinois. Dr. Dennis Christensen formerly provided women with health care in Milwaukee, but after Roe v. Wade was struck down by the U.S. Supreme Court, Wisconsin put into effect a pre-Civil War abortion ban, forcing the doctor to shut down his clinic here. Rockford Family Planning Center is 20 miles from the Wisconsin border and about 70 miles from Madison. Abortion remains legal in Illinois, Iowa and Minnesota. Ice fishing fans should be extra cautious this year because of the warm start to the new year. Adam Strelo, a marine conservation warden for the Wisconsin DNR, tells WISN-TV 4 inches of ice is generally safe for a person to walk on and people should never go out on the ice alone. You're listening to The Shaw, 101 FM, WAUK, 540 AM.
Women hear a lot about self-care these days. Advice on ways to relax, exercise, eat healthy, and more. Those are all great. But one of the most important self-care steps we can take is making sure we're financially secure later in life. That means saving money for retirement. It's never too late to start. And it's the kind of self-care that brings peace of mind that lasts. For small steps you can take to save for retirement, visit WeSaySaveIt.org. That's WeSaySaveIt.org. A message from AARP and the Ad Council.
Hey, this is Matt from Design Garden. Remember when the internet was new? Back then you had to leave your house to start a business. Companies used to pay programmers bags of cash to get online. Now, small businesses can get online with a Facebook business page, or Squarespace, or Google My Business, or WordPress. But which tools should you use? Can you afford to go down the wrong path? Design Garden uses modern tools to build your website the right way. Find us online at design.garden. Again, that's design.garden.
Hey, this is Jim Santel. I am the host of Morning Cannolis. Every single Saturday morning from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m., we talk about the major stories in law, in government, and the aspiration for justice in America. Delighted to have you join, call in, and be a part of our discussion right here on the networks of Civic Media.
This is Pat Greitlow from Up North News Radio. On the air, online, or on demand, make it a point to catch the first word on Wisconsin news, sports, and more weekday mornings from 6 to 8 all across the stations of the Civic Media Radio Network.
Wilding your yard with things like prairie grass. For help, go to rewild.org.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So as I said, I think education is the conservative battlefield. They're gearing up to finish off education, public education. Hey, you know, Education Incorporated, the moneyed interests see it as the next profit center. But But politicians see it as a way, well, to keep people in line. Don't ask too many questions. You know, be a good one. And that's kind of frightening because for me, education is about expanding thought, asking questions, lots of them all the time, and not just falling into, well, being someone who Googles Martin Luther King Jr. and picks out a quote that fits your narrow-minded ideology and slap it out there like you'd be someone who'd be marching in Selma. Scary times we are in. That's why I've asked a teacher to come today and share some thoughts on, well, Martin Luther King Day and also the state of public education in the country. That's why I've asked Catherine Vaughn to come talk with us. She's an elementary art teacher, also a writer. Catherine, thanks for taking time for us.
Hi, Rick. Thanks for having me, and especially on this very important day. I fully believe that public education is a civil right. So to talk about it today on Martin Luther King Day seems very special.
Yeah, and you're from the Memphis area, so it seemed particularly fitting, given the fact that, you know, Dr. King was murdered in Memphis while they're, you know, standing up for striking public sector workers, garbage workers who were literally dying on the job because of lack of voice and to this day still don't have a pension. And that's the, kind of the education we don't get about Dr. King. We get the Google quotes that my Republican friends love to throw out.
That's exactly right. Yes, where I live, for your listeners' benefit, is I live about halfway in between Memphis and halfway in between where Alex Haley wrote Roots. So I am in a cotton field. I'm in an area that's been overlooked for a very long time and has seen a lot of struggle in recent years and throughout its past.
Now, education being one of those things that, again I think has the opportunity to raise people up or to keep them sadly where they are. And I look at a lot of our inner cities. I look at a lot of our poverty-ridden areas. We're just not funding education. In fact, in Missouri, I understand there's some rural districts that have gone to a four-day school week because they're just not funding education at the proper level. And also, I would argue that we're dividing the education dollars to hand off to profiteers for the latest gimmick, you know, be it charters or cyber charters or whatever that next gimmick's going to be. What's going on in your state?
Yes, well, I couldn't agree with you more. Education, especially public education, is the great equalizer in our country. It's the one institution where you learn to work with people from all types of different backgrounds, demographics, religions, points of view. Nowhere else in America are people getting that type of exposure to diversity as they are in a public education classroom. Tennessee is one of the states that is at the forefront of this conservative rewriting of public ed. And we tend to pass more laws about public education than most other states in the nation. This last year, we saw CRT bans. We saw attacks on our public libraries and our classroom libraries. Tennessee has really had an interesting time in the last couple of years as far as education. We're incredibly defunded. My state is probably 40, and we're in the lower 40s when it comes to education funding. It's a battle here, and a lot of people are leaving.
Now, you know, on the education front, you point out that the theory about race that's critical, that everyone on the right is all you know, lathered up about. I see it as just learning basic history. Now, you know, back in 2015, we did a civil rights tour here as part of the show. And we went to a lot, well, every state throughout the South and a lot of places where they've now put up, you know, civil rights institutes and museums and tourist traps of going, hey, look how bad we were to people. Come to partake in our tourism. You know, disaster tourism is what I've been calling it. And the images and the history that is in those places is seriously disturbing. And I think something that needs to be learned so that maybe, I don't know, maybe in 2021 you don't have Fort Smith, Arkansas, a little sheriff's department letting a man starve to death in their jail. Maybe that doesn't happen in the 2020s. Maybe we learn from the history. Maybe we don't starve black people to death in jail. I don't know. Just a thought.
Yeah, learning about the history and the culture of other people never made me feel, and this is what Republicans say, it will make students feel bad about their whiteness. Learning about others never made me personally feel bad about my whiteness. It made me have empathy for others and an understanding and compassion about the human story that others are experiencing. And, you know, it makes you a better person to learn about other people and the struggles that they've gone through. So why would we not want to teach our children that?
Well, I think a part of it has, you know, there's a political ideology in this country that, you know, that some of my, I'm not going to call them friends, some of the white supremacist folks, some of the white nationalist folks don't want you to think about.
Right.
And that's angering and frustrating, because we can be a much better society. And I'm struggling on this day because I started today's show off with a story about a guy, you know, 50-year-old man, 200-pound guy who was starved to death in a jail cell because I don't know. I can't figure out what it is about us that would allow your humanity to just to go away from you. And to, I'm struggling in this moment. I'm really struggling here.
Yeah, we definitely have a crisis of compassion and empathy and civility in our country right now. People treat each other worse than I think I've seen in my lifetime. And it's really disturbing. And I can't see it at this moment getting better.
So how do we turn this around? I mean, I'm with you. I don't know how we get out of this. I don't know how we bridge these gaps because people are in their silos and they're just throwing bombs at each other. We don't even talk to each other anymore. I used to have conservative friends that I used to love to argue with because you could have a good spirited conversation, a good argument, and then you'd walk away and slap each other on the back and go, oh, you're still an idiot, and go on with your day. Now it's this kind of visceral hatred that you disagree with me. How dare you? I think it comes back to our education system.
I agree with you. Last year during the pandemic, our governor, Bill Lee in Tennessee, signed the CRT bill into law. And I signed a letter along with the Tennessee Educators of Color as an advocate member asking him to veto the bill. We didn't have enough information on it at the time. My name was leaked to my local Republican Party in my town as being the only teacher in my area to have signed this bill. And being 8 months pregnant at the time, I was targeted. And my husband gave me mace. I was allowed to go places by myself. And that was an incredible experience to have. It was incredibly scary and, you know, not something I think would have happened 10 or 12 or 15 years ago. It's just the place where we are in America right now. We just do not have understanding for each other.
Or compassion. I mean, you know, as a teacher, mm-hmm. you know, I look to you as someone who I entrust with you my most valuable resource, our children. And to have people say, oh, you're some of the arrows you guys take, would never in a million years do your job. Thank you for doing it. because of this, look, I mean, I don't know how you get up every day and go, I'm going to give it my all. I'm going to shape the hearts and minds of the kids of the future of this country. And then to have people throw these kind of hate filled arrows at you. I don't know how you do it.
It's definitely a challenge. And also we kind of see the humor in it in a way. This last year when the kitty litter controversy came out where, you know, I guess QAnon was talking about how we have litter boxes in our classrooms for children that identify as furries. And I just thought, you know, I don't get paid enough as a teacher in general. I'm definitely not cleaning a litter box on top of my daily duties, nor is my janitor who's paid $7.25 an hour. Like, we're not doing that. I do, however, have kitty litter in my classroom, but for a completely different reason. I have kitty litter in my classroom for a lockdown bucket. I have a painter's bucket in the corner with kitty litter and basically child-sized MREs in case we are in a lockdown situation for longer than a few hours and kids are going to need to use a restroom. So
now that's deadly serious.
Is deadly serious.
Yeah, you know, because I was just reading a story before I went on air of the 6-year-old kid who came in and shot his teacher, and they're like, well, we searched his backpack. You know, how does a 6-year-old outsmart the entire school district to get a gun into a school and shoot a teacher is beyond me. But, you know, here we are.
That story was incredibly troubling. I chose specifically to teach smaller children because they are less likely to carry than, say, our high schoolers.
Yeah, it's So what does the future hold for us? I mean, I see your toddler running around. You know, when you look at, and it's a beautiful child, what do you see as his future?
Well, his future is going to be interesting. Hopefully public education can stand the test of time. Hopefully we can fight these privatizers with their vouchers and their education savings accounts, trying to divert our public funds to private and often religious institutions that can discriminate. Hopefully we can battle that out for another 10, 15 years. But there's a lot of money being thrown into this fight. I know in Tennessee, lobbyists spent something like $60 million over the last session trying to get these private education bills passed that will divert our public funds to these religious institutions. I'm a big separation of church and state gal, and I definitely don't want to think of my public dollars being spent on private religious schools.
I mean, this is the thing that gets me. They're willing to spend all of this money on destroying public education, but they won't spend that money to make it better. Look, the public education system has some problems. It's underfunded. It needs more funding. And all we hear from the Republicans is, well, we can't throw money at it. Yeah, you can't throw money at every problem, but ones that need money, it helps. And I look at a lot of our problems, it comes down to the lack of resources, class sizes too large, a lot of things that we could do that we're just not, because the motive here, and you disagree with me if you need to, but the motive here is to destroy public education so that we can go back to a good segregated school system. Because again, on this day, sadly, in this era, it's still about black and white.
It definitely is. Where I teach in my community, we have a private school that opened in the 1970s, specifically when integration started. And you could see where people were going and why they were choosing to put their children into that school. And that school is now a recipient of some voucher money. So again, it's going to continue to segregate our schools. And you know, separate is not equal, as we've learned over time.
Yeah, so you know, I've had this conversation with people over the years. Was that the wrong decision? Should they have stuck with separate but equal and demand equal and demand better resources and demand more money? Because clearly, together and unequal is no better than separate and unequal.
We just need to focus now on funding our public schools. Like I, as an art teacher, teach over 700 children a year. My yearly budget for art supplies is $250.
What?
Yes, for 750 children.
So where does the rest of that money come from? Because clearly you need more than just that.
Mostly private grants that I write on my own free time. I also do a little bit of fundraising, but where I teach, we're rural poverty. We have wonderful families, but unfortunately they don't have a lot to give. So fundraising is a challenge.
Now, why is music education so important? I know I have my story, but I'm curious, what your thoughts are.
Well, arts education is incredibly important. Every time I open a fundraiser online or say a donor's choose, when we were still allowed to do that, but that's another story. I would receive letters from people across the country, even the world, saying, you know, arts education saved my life. I wouldn't have made it through a day if it hadn't been for my theater teacher or my high school ceramics teacher. And arts connects to people in a way that other subjects don't. I mean, it motivates kids. It keeps kids in school that need to be there. It's a place where children can feel successful, that will feel successful in a traditional classroom.
Yeah. So last question I've got for you. What's the advice to parents out there? Because I don't know that a lot of parents think about on a daily basis that their local public school is being systematically defunded, that there's a movement afoot to attempt to destroy public education and replace it with, well, if you can afford it, you might get an education. What's the advice to parents?
The advice to parents is to be involved in your children's education, to do what you can to get inside the school, join the PTA, the PTO, the parent organization, see what's really going on in the school. If you can sub for a couple days, you can really get a feel of what's going on inside a school if you're walking the halls with the students.
Well, good stuff, Catherine. I appreciate you taking some time for us. Keep up the great work. I thank you for the work that you do. And I appreciate your time.
Thanks. It was great to talk to you.
You too. Thanks so much. Catherine Vaughn, educator, art teacher, writer. Look, at the end of the day, we've got to save our public education system. And it starts with you. I'd love to hear your thoughts. 1-866-416-RICK. 1-866-416-7425. We're going to take a quick break. Right back after this. Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1946. That was the day the United Packing House Workers of America went on strike. Their initial demand was for a 25-cent an hour raise. They were also joined in the strike by the Amalgamated Meat Cutters Union. The action was part of a massive wave of walkouts after World War II that included steel and auto workers. Frustrated that wartime profits had not benefited working people, unions across multiple industries were on the march. According to historian Roger Horowitz, the United Packing House Workers of America's strike was supported by an overwhelming membership vote of 20 to 1. For 3 months before the strike, the membership prepared. The strike was planned with the strategy of strong local rank and file organizing. Membership was encouraged to participate in mass pickets, as well as in building community support for the action. This grassroots organizing proved a successful tactic. The strike cut meat production across the country by 50%. The Brooklyn Daily Eagle headline declared, "Rush on meat as strike cuts supply." The newspaper described how 300 women had stormed one marketplace to purchase meat before it ran out. Alarmed by the consumer shortages, President Harry S. Truman stepped in. On the 10th day of the strike, by the authority of the War Labor Disputes Act, he ordered the workers back to their jobs. President Truman ordered a commission to study their demands. In the end, the commission awarded the workers a 16-cent an hour raise. Although it fell short of the quarter an hour demand, it was the largest increase ever won in the industry. It was also the first successful strike by the meatpacking workers. The workers had shown how local solidarity could demonstrate the power of labor. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com, like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter at laborhistoryin2.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
So what's interesting is, you know, in the break there, talking with Catherine, she brought up the fact that she's got a master's degree. A master's degree, and it took her getting a master's degree and over a decade to just make $50,000 a year. You wonder why people are leaving the education profession. You wonder why people, why we have, I think I read a story, 400,000 teachers nationwide were short. You wonder why? Because you're not paying them. You're defunding it. And this is done on purpose. This is done systematically. You know, it's always interesting to me to listen to my Republican friends talk about how there's all of these plots and all of this stuff out there, like that theory about race that's critical. It's everywhere. It's a you know, they're indoctrinating the children, when the reality is there is a plan for public education, and it's a bad one. It's about destroying it. It's about taking it away. Because they don't want a great equalizer. They don't want, you know, I love the George Carlin bit. They don't want a populace smart enough to know that they're getting screwed over. They don't want people to be capable of critical thinking, of critical thought. They don't want people asking questions. They want people marginally smart enough to push the buttons, move the paper, do the work, but not smart enough to answer the questions. But, and this is the important part of it, the part that Carlin left out, with such inflated egos that they don't know any better. We hear now all the time, you know, people don't want to work anymore. We hear it about the teachers. They don't want to work anymore. They don't want to work for poverty wages. You know, someone sent me a job posting where you had to be proficient in Microsoft. You had to be, you know, proficient in all these different, you know, computer softwares and you know, and all this, you know, all these qualifications, like a whole page of qualifications. Preferred qualification educationally was a master's degree. minimum salary requirements, $15.29 an hour. And you go, wait a second. It's not that people don't want to work. It's that people don't want to work for poverty wages. And this is that example. And I think people are finally starting to come around to, hey, you know what? I'm tired of getting the short end of the stick. Now, what's angering is the right has a masterful media strategy. Last week, what did we talk about the whole last half of last week? Talked about stoves and how the stove troopers were going to come and take your gas stoves. Yeah, there were no stove troopers. There were nobody taking your stoves. But boy, did they get the outrage machine ramped up. The symbiotic relationship between the media mouthpieces and the political mouthpieces and all of the gears and wheels and all of that moving in perfect harmony to do what? To misinform, disinform, and to divide. So why? So then we don't ask the questions of why life is harder. You talk to anybody, you go, things were better years ago. We've made higher wages. Life was simpler. You hear that all the time. And why is that? Well, because the share of the economy was, and I keep coming back to this, because this is the true north for me. The share of workers being able to participate in the economy was much greater. You had much stronger unions, you had stronger bargaining power, you had stronger ability to participate. You had a tax code that said, you know what, we're going to invest in things like education. We're going to ensure that the things, you know, I think back to when I was in school, and I went to a working class high school. They had a shop class, they had, you know, whatever you needed. You didn't have to pay to play sports, you didn't have to pay to be in any of the extracurriculars, they were all there. I look at my kids now and the opportunities they have to engage in extracurricular activities and school functions, not there. And for me, this is part of that experience of education, of bringing people in to be part of a society that's being destroyed. Because this is Education Choice Week. This is Choice Week. Which is why Sarah Huckabee Sanders was on TV going, you know, we're going to destroy that public education and give you the choice of a private school. Not the one that she would send her kids to, not the private schools that the 1% send their kids to. No, not those private schools. Private for you. And what we know that the whole charter thing hasn't panned out. There are a couple that do a little bit better, but the majority of them, they do know better and in a lot of cases do worse. And you know what? They go broke every couple of years. You know, it's like businesses. You know, businesses go broke every 5 years, just about. Most startups fail within 5 years. Same thing with charter schools. Only we keep propping them up with a lot of rich people money. Money that we used to tax and use for education. We now give tax breaks for them to be able to choose where they want their tax dollars to go in creating an alternative education system. And what does that leave the working class people? Well, stuck in no man's land. Hoping, wishing, wanting, and struggling. And then told, be grateful. Just be happy you have a job. Be happy your kids get educations. On this day, it's kind of hard not to be angry. Because when you talk about a dream that has not been fulfilled, a dream that, given the reality of the moment we're in, is probably never going to be fulfilled. Because the rich and powerful will never allow it to happen. Because we keep voting for the clowns that we've got now. And it's time to start throwing some bums out. I mean, seriously, look at what the Republicans have done so far in the House. We knew it was going to be a clown show, and it has been exactly, it's been everything you could have asked for. Except the fact is nothing's going to get done. Lives are not going to get better. Opportunities aren't going to get better. But at least the bread and circus will be there. Love to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@therickssmithshow.com. Send me something to cheer me up.
You are listening to WAUK 540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha. Always streaming on the Civic Media app.